We are also on high alert in the event that there's a need to provide support. That's why NGNC is kind of a unique branch in the department in that it does not only focus on national, although we are not seeing others only focus on national, but we have got a lot of regional and international responsibilities, and I'll demonstrate those. The other point that is highlighted here is support requested from the portfolio committee. We should be here and also leave, submit areas that will require support so that the portfolio committee can begin to program that in their priorities for the term. As I indicated in terms of the context, disaster risk management is key to sustainable development and humanity. That means ensuring that development is risk-averse, but also going beyond that to deal with humanitarian issues where there has been a crisis in terms of providing relief, blankets, temporary shelter, psychosocial support for victims of disasters and so on and so forth. But we also, and this has been highlighted by the previous presentation, my colleague Mr. Lodi, that with increasing population, rapid urbanization, and climate change, hazards are increasing. Various hazards, geological, biological, and other hazards are increasing, basically implying that the measures to implement disaster management must be heightened. So the third point also recognized climate change and that vulnerability is increasing. And really by vulnerability we mean the exposure that a person or infrastructure is facing from hazards. It could be in areas where people have built houses in flat line areas, people built under power lines, or people have built houses that are not of a strong structure, such that when a storm comes, those houses are undermined. So hence the service delivery and development interface of disaster risk management. Or you have a low-lying bridge in an area that has got a very huge catchment where a lot of water will come and undermine that infrastructure. And the last point there, we are just really saying, yes, South Africa is like other countries facing disaster challenges as a result of climate change, but also service delivery issues such as service delivery backlogs, poor quality of some services is also compounding the disaster situation. We also, and we have shared copy of the Act, but we would like to premise mandate from the Constitution, the Supreme Law of the Republic, which in terms of Section 41 says that all spheres of government are required to secure the well-being of the people of the Republic. And this could be read with Section 24 of the Constitution, which says that everyone has a right to an environment that is not harmful to their well-being, and that states should take reasonable measures to ensure that the environment is protected for the current and future generation. I'm just paraphrasing, implying that in managing disaster risk, we don't only think about the current generation, but think about future generation or posterity. So, and in terms of the legal arrangements for implementing the function as per the Constitution, Schedule 4, Part A of the Constitution made disaster management an area of concurrent competence between national and provincial government. Okay, thank you very much.
Dorian is coming.
So, national and provincial government and municipalities in terms of Chapter 5 of the Act that you have, the thinner booklet, if you look at Chapter 5, it talks about municipal disaster management. So there is an extension of the mandate to local government by Chapter 5 of that piece of legislation. And what is also notable, Honorable Chair and members, is that Schedule 4, Part B of the Constitution also prescribed that firefighting services is the responsibility of local government. On the basis of that, the department administers the Fire Brigade Services Act with the minister at national level having the responsibility for regulations and chairing what we call the Fire Brigade Board. But local government has a primary responsibility for firefighting. It is also important to note that the National Disaster Management Center, which now manages or coordinates disaster management in the country, is established as a presidentially assigned function to the relevant cabinet minister, in this case, Minister of Cox. And the next bullet says, we also administer Fire Brigade Services Act, I've already indicated that. So what will also be worthy of internalizing, honorable members, is that the mandate of the NDMC or the National Center is to promote an integrated and coordinated system of disaster management with special emphasis on. So the emphasis should be on prevention. Prevention is better than cure, is a normal phrase that we are used to. Mitigation. This is not prevent the occurrence, but at least mitigate the effect so that it's not that damaging. And this should be by national, provincial, and municipal organs of state. So you can see how our net, how wide our net is cut. To make sure that national sector, that means the horizontal coordination, and this goes also beyond sector departments. We also have to work with the private sector and other role players. And in fact, with business and so on and so forth. And then, statutory functionaries and other role players involved in disaster management and communities. So our mandate now basically also goes up to ensuring that communities are resilient. And the IUDF, as you correctly summed up, is one of the instruments that helps us to leverage capabilities to provide risk reduction. I've just indicated that Chapter 5 of the Act does give local government a responsibility for disaster management as a development concern. And we are saying here that disaster management has also been assigned to local government. And Bullet 2 states that disaster management centers must be established in every province and every district and metropolitan municipalities. And we quote a section there which honorable members can refer to. And that local government is empowered to deal with the number of functions which are closely related to disaster management under Part B, Schedule 4, and with indicated fire services. And I've already touched on this aspect of Chair and Honourable Members, that the thrust of the Act in terms of how the country should approach disaster management within the sustainable service delivery and development concern is to ensure prevention or reducing the risk of disasters, mitigating the severity, emergency preparedness, safety. Now we are approaching the rainfall season in the northern area, in the summer rainfall areas, and for this area soon we'll be in the fire season. So preparedness plans are very important on this, and we are already doing work. And of course, linked to that is rapid and effective response, that our national contingency plan and provincial and municipal contingency plan must provide for how are we going to respond rapidly, and also post-disaster recovery and rehabilitation. Where there's been a damage to a bridge which you cannot construct in a month or 3 months' time, how do you program that in such a way that you are able to recover from that? So it continues that the Disaster Management Act and the policy framework, the two documents that we have shared, provide that the national, provincial, and municipal spheres have a clear mandate in respect of the disaster management function. I think I've already touched on that. The last bullet basically says the heads of centers at national, provincial, and municipal level are responsible for exercising the powers and performing duties of the center and taking all decisions with regard to powers and duties of the center. Some of the decisions are taken at the wink of an eye, in that if you there's an emergency that requires evacuation, we need to activate the chopper, and we really have to do that irrespective of the time of the day or the night that this occurs. And we have seen that with NYSNA, response to fires, and so on and so forth. So in terms of the National Disaster Management Center, the last paragraph does say that we have to carry out our responsibilities within the National Disaster Management Framework, because it's a policy framework. You can see it's thicker. It basically spells out what measures should be put in place. There are about seven measures. The first one is that we must have institutional arrangements. You must have guidelines, policies, head of the center. The second one is that you must carry out risk assessment so that you understand the risk dynamics of the municipality or the country or the province. The third issue is that you must have risk reduction plans. The fourth one is that you should have response and recovery mechanisms. And the fifth one is about information management and communication. Then the sixth one is about education, training, public awareness and research, and the last one is funding arrangements. So we follow that as outlined in the framework that you have. We are required by the Act to carry out all those responsibilities. I'm not sure whether I should go through each one of them. The key ones, basically, the first one, institutional arrangements. You certainly cannot achieve effective disaster management without bringing on board all role players. So the premise should be to build teams that understand, multidisciplinary teams that understand their mandate, and they can execute their roles and responsibilities. And the second one, which is underlined, is that we also have a responsibility to engage international role players and countries, international role players, even within the region, on matters relating to disaster management. If you look at section 15.2A of the Act, you'll be able to find that provision. Hence, I'll list later the various committees that we serve within the global space. Section 15.2A. These are other responsibilities. They are also spelled out in Section 15 of the Act, honorable members. They can be read, and then they continue. The last one in this slide, 12, is where it is said that we make recommendations on funding of disaster management and initiate and facilitate efforts to make such funding available. So this is a very important point, honorable members, in that often when there has been an incident, the expectation is that COPTA should release money. There are processes that have to be followed, and the processes, the principle of the processes is that COPTA is not the first line of defense in terms of funding disaster. The relevant sector departments that you can mention, whether human settlement, education, if it's about schools, health, if it's about health infrastructure, clinics, hospitals, roads and transport, if it's about bridges, agriculture, if it's about agricultural issues, have to budget for and even reprioritize their funds in the face of disaster situations. The COPTA only comes in when they have exhausted their resources. And you, for that, you can refer to Section 2.1b of this piece of legislation, that an event is not a disaster if it can be dealt with in terms of another piece of legislation of a particular sector department. So I thought it is worthy of emphasis so that we are able to provide thought leadership from a very grounded basis. The section that I also referred to in terms of our international engagement, where I said the National Center is one of the most traveling branch, and it is for a valid reason. The reason is the mandate that the National Center plays, which is unique within the department. As I'm speaking now, there are colleagues from the center that are in Kenya. There's some that have just returned from Angola. We'll be going to Indonesia. and we can provide reasons why this is happening. So I indicated that section, what does it say? And these are the forums that we are key. The country is key to geopolitical forums that the country is key to through the Department of International Relations. The first one is that we are a national center is the focal point for what we call United Nations Global Platform for Disaster Reduction. So all disaster reduction coordination mechanisms within the United Nations lend the sounding board is the national center in the country. There's a forum that is meeting tomorrow with involving all world players in the country, and then the reports are generated to the minister, cabinet, then depending on what needs to be reported to UN, they will then go through to UN. So it's a very, very key platform that we are part of, and there are international meetings that we hold in the context of this. The second one that we are part of is the United Nations International Search and Rescue Advisory Committee. This is a team, a structure that deals with rescue issues. I think you'll remember when there was in Haiti, the tsunami in Haiti, the earthquake in Haiti, we had teams that went there. Now the Bahamas were also on standby in the event that there's a need. Japan, we sent the teams there. We have two teams in the country. One is in Drakenstein municipality here, which I recommend honorable members visit. You'll see the massive capacity that the country has to deal with search and rescue issues. The other one is in Johannesburg, in the city of Johannesburg, in Gauteng. And the one in the city of Johannesburg has just been classified as a medium team. That means they can handle specific capabilities within the UN system in dealing with disaster situations. So we are part of this, and we have just received a request from the Secretariat of Interest that South Africa chairs is considered sharing from in 2021 the Africa, Asia and Europe group of INSERAC. So we might be assuming the chairship of that forum, and it will involve hosting the UN forum in the country and also attending international meetings. I'm aware that there's one in October next month in Italy where we will be preparing for that arrangement. The next one that we are key to is the Indian Ocean Rim Association. Indian Ocean Rim Association is a forum of 21 countries established in 1996 on the initiative of our former state president, Dr. Nelson Mandela, and it's looking at the Indian Ocean risks in the Indian Ocean Rim, supporting various forums like export, tourism, and so on and so forth. So disaster management is key there. South Africa is a key player. The next one is the Indian Ocean Tsunami Early Warning and Mitigation Service. This is about the risk of tsunamis in the Indian Ocean belt, and we are a very key part of that. Now, end of September, we'll be in Indonesia to learn from Indonesia and also share our SOPs for the country in the event that we might face a tsunami. The other one is the SADC and African Union Disaster Risk Reduction Technical Committee. We are very key to the SADC, as you be aware, we just have been chairing the SADC team, and now Namibia is currently the chair. So South Africa is a key player. We are even working on a SADC disaster response protocol. Hence, we have sent the team to apologies, the substantive one will be this one. Others, the other slides will be photos of areas that we recommend for the visit. My apologies. Right, let me just conclude on this. The other forum is called DINSUR. disaster risk management, sustainability, and urban resilience. This is looking at trans-boundary risk. For now, it includes five countries, Malawi, the Comoros, Madagascar, and Mozambique, and of course, South Africa is in the process of formalizing its joining, so that we deal with trans-boundary risk as well as urban resilience after. The next one is United Nations Disaster Assessment and Assistance Committee, we call it UNDAC. With this UNDAC, we send the teams to Mozambique after Idai and Cyclone Kenneth recently to provide assistance, and we send them to other countries when they are required. The other one is the BRICS Disaster Risk Management Joint Task Force. We are also a key player in that. These are just some of them. There are other arrangements like our MOU with the United Nations University and other agencies, UN Spider, and for remote sensing aspects. We also, as I indicated, have fire services, regulatory and policy framework that I indicated that the National Center administers the Fire Brigade Services Act. This slide will be in your presentation, honorable members. And that the Act provides for the establishment, maintenance, and employment and coordination and standardization of fire brigade services across the country. And we have identified this piece of legislation as an older one because it was promulgated in 1987, and we are currently in the process of reviewing it in order to align it or harmonize with applicable legislation like the Resource Assistance Act and the current National Affairs and Forest Fire Act. The COG is in the process of submitting a white paper, the draft white paper on fire services. It has already been presented to UNESCO the 14th of August, and honorable members will can expect to retweet that and engage before it is finalized by Cabinet. This is the white paper that will form the policy basis for the revised fire services legislation. So we will start drafting the Fire Services Act bill out of that policy framework. And basically, it will be fundamental to repositioning fire services to respond to changing and growing needs of society. As you know, fire services is a critical service to ensure that emergency needs of our communities are addressed, but also that our buildings comply with fire standards at all material times, and that the bylaws of municipalities must reflect the management of fire risk. That will then, by extension, be enhancing the implementation of the National Development Plan. And we are just saying the fire service role must be seen in the context of the broader national development agenda that has been set, and that it is critical to protect strategic and productive assets. It can be a mall. We will have seen recently with the the incident, the building. Lisbon, building in Johannesburg, the fire there and other areas, that fire services is very critical. The shed fires that we experience on a regular basis, so it's very critical that we have effective fire services. But one that does not just wait until there are fires, but the one that promotes fire safety and prevention through awareness, advocacy in the community, and ensuring that our structure and we are just saying a well-functioning and sustainable fire service is critical for attracting investment. An investor who wants to invest in a particular area will first want to find out the extent to which the investment will be safe from various hazards, hazmat and fires and so on and so forth. Okay, the last point there is just to say that currently the NDMC is overseeing the development, maintenance, and operationalization of urban search and rescue teams. I've indicated that we have a team in Gauteng, we have a team in the Western Cape, but we have also started, we have just established a team in Northwest, urban search and rescue team. We are busy in KZN and Eastern Cape. So it's area that we also have that capacity, so we really appreciating that progress that has been made. We acknowledge that car service is a capital and personnel intensive function, and the challenges, hence the need to amend the legislation, is that there are 6-year legal mandates which hinder implementation, particularly between districts and local municipalities in terms of car services, and there's also declining capacity and budget for car services. There's no ring-fence allocation for car services to municipalities prioritized within the equitable share, and it does really depend on how they prioritize fire services in a particular area, and this is posing a serious challenge. We're engaging National Treasury through the unit ID of Mutashupi to make sure that we have a fire services funding framework. The other challenge, institutional challenge that we face is that there's lack of fire services focal points in some provinces. The provinces have to coordinate for municipalities to have fire services capacity, to budget in place, roll out awareness. But for now, five provinces have no focal points. To go to that province, there's no one that is coordinating fire services. That makes it very, very difficult for the coordination of fire services in those provinces. And we really need support in that respect. And also for the NDMC, and you'll see in the next slide, the coordination of fire services is only managed by two officials in the National Disaster Management Center, the director who's sitting at the back there and the deputy director. This is a huge challenge, having to cover the whole country, having to support search and rescue issues, regulations and other methods. It is really a huge challenge, but we are working hard to ensure that is addressed. This is just our structure, honorable members, as the National Center. We are just around safety officials, coordinating all the departments, doing international work, and interacting with all municipalities, including other administrative methods that we are responsible for. So the unit, as you can see there, under myself, Chief Director is responsible for legislation and policy management, and as I said, it's not only for national policy, it's also for international, regional and international. There's another one that deals with risk reduction and response coordination, all response in the country, coordination falls under here, but also plans, because we are saying disaster risk management must be underscored by priority, risk assess, risk reduction. So this unit is coordinating plans of all sectors. The Northern Ireland plan, we work on that. The nuclear plan, we work on that. Energy plan in all its manifestations, we work on that. Agriculture. So far, the counting that we have done last week was that about 621 plans had to go through the NDMC for review and really guidance through this unit. And it's a unit of maximum five officials, including admin capacity. So there's another one dealing with education issues and awareness, coordinating the whole country, all sectors, including bringing on board all 26 universities to develop curriculum and guide curriculum discourse and strategic research. That is also a unit that has about six officials. And the fire services one I've already alluded to is just the director and the deputy director for the whole country. So this is just the breakdown. See, we have got only 29 officials, including admin. So the functioning of provincial disaster management centers, bullet 2 just says that we support provincial disaster management centers, all of them, all 9 of them, and municipal disaster management centers, and that we conduct compliance assessments to check the extent to which they implement the function. And this is the criteria that we use based on the act and the framework. We check whether the province has a disaster management framework approved and implemented. So if you go into the act, section 28 and 42 spells this out. So the second issue go to check whether they've appointed head of the center. Because without head of the center is a challenge. Adequate personnel, do they have personnel, although we also don't have adequate personnel. Physical facilities, a disaster management center should function even in the face of disaster situations. So do they have a center, IT systems and other equipment? The next issue, have they done risk assessment? Do they know what geophysical risks, what biological, what hydrometeorological, and so on and so forth risks do they face in the locality? I'll give an example of Tulamela. Do they appreciate flood lines in their areas? Where are the flood lines? Do they appreciate areas that are storm past? Naturally, areas that will have storms, and how do you build in those areas that are storm past? Because people build, but if you build in such a manner that your house will withstand a storm in 5 years or so time. So disaster response, we check whether they have mechanisms to respond to disasters. We also check whether they've got an annual report, they submit annual reports. Like in our case, we are finalizing an annual report, which is an addendum to the department one. They also have annual reports. Effective functioning of the advisory forum. Do they bring everyone on board quarterly in terms of that section? Do they have disaster management plans, and are those plans integrated in the IDPs? Section 26 of the Municipal Assistance Act is clear about the need to integrate disaster management plans in IDPs. So do they do that? Do they have stakeholder and community capacity in disaster reduction? Do they engage stakeholders on the ground, including the traditional leadership institutions? And do they have funding and capacity generally? So this is the report in terms of how we found provinces performing and municipalities. We were just saying the figure listed depicts that 91% of disaster management centers scored 80% better against the minimum assessment criteria. So about 91% just scored 80%. But this is just about what they have, but whether they're implementing that remains another issue, and we can only test that if we go to the ground for them to demonstrate. I think what will also be important, honorable members, is this slide which you also have, which depicts each province, and being public representatives, you can easily relate to your respective province in terms of where they stand. For instance, in terms of Eastern Cape, or disaster management meet minimum infrastructure requirements, whether they have a center. The first column there, yes, go to Bisho, you'll find a disaster management center that recently established. So they are compliant. Free State, no sense. They are using Kolonoma Hospital, as you might be aware. And Gauteng, yes, they've just moved to a center. But whether it meets all minimum requirements is something that could be looked at. We have a guideline that we have approved in 2017-18 financial year on infrastructure requirements for disaster management centers, which we can also avail for purpose of, okay, also in the state document. And the next one, KwaZulu-Natal, yes, the center in Peter Maritzburg, a youth center. Limpopo, no center. Mpumalanga province, yes, there's a center, you know, as you drive out of town towards White River, you see big center there next to the archive, the provincial archive, a good center. Northern Cape, no disaster management center, only admin office. So, one area northwest, they just moved to a massive center, you will be happy to support the visit to that center. Western Cape, yes, in the Tigerberg Hospital area, there's a center. Well functioning, yesterday we have been monitoring the hurricane from that side. And then, I will not go into everything because at least we have it, honorable members. The second one is functional in terms of compliance criteria, so we need provinces. And then the third column is head of center appointed. So in the case, we had a head of center, but we learned she has been transferred, so now there's someone acting. It's an area that we will be engaging the leadership to establish how they will address it. The next column is about disaster management advisory forum, whether it's in place, where they convene relevant role players. All provinces, yes, But obviously, we need to go deeper into the extent to which those sectors are taking ownership. And then the next one, disaster management plan developed. Yes, they all have disaster management plans, and it will help these honorable members in engaging at provincial level or at constituency level. You can actually be briefed about the provincial plans that are in place. And as you can see, Northern Cape doesn't have a plan. And we are facing water scarcity and drought condition now. Then the question becomes, how do we become fit for purpose in terms of intervening on the prevailing condition? And then the last column is about disaster management framework, whether it is in place. Again, for our province, Northern Cape, is not there, and Gauteng, the framework is in a draft. So we are also supporting the provinces to put those in place. I'm aware that Northern Cape was in the process of appointing a service provider to develop a provincial plan, and that Gauteng, we are also involved in supporting them in putting together a framework and a plan. So in terms of the multi-sectoral nature of disaster management function, I think this is the key principles, honorable members. I request your indulgence that I don't go into them, except to say that disaster management must be implemented on a continuous basis. You don't see hazards now in wait, because climate change and variability increases risk, but also our anthropogenic or human actions as to where we live, how we build our structures, call for implementing continuous risk management. The epidemiological issues, we have just been dealing with the polyfocus short-haul borer, which is affecting cheese. Recently, agriculture has just been dealing with the swine fever. We have various diseases that happen as a result of climate change. So we continually have to make sure that our strategies are up to standard. This is just to say, every role player must make sure that they have institutional arrangements. Let me give you an example of human settlement department. They have to have a structure in the department, a focal unit that coordinates disaster management within human settlement. Department of Health should have a structure. You'll find that in Department of Health, they will cover five issues. They will cover EMS, emergency medical services. They will cover emergency medicine issues. They will cover hospital infrastructure issues. They will cover disease outbreaks. We call that committee MINORT for disease outbreaks. So they continually have to do surveillance, but hospitals must be put in safer areas. We shouldn't have a situation where there was flooding, the hospital is flooded to this level. And we have those that have been in that situation. And we work so hard with the relevant department to ensure that they are risk-proof, those hospitals, and we have had successes. We can mention them when they're ready. So, hence, I said, I like the recommendation of the legacy report of the Swiss administration in saying that there needs to be a colloquium, and I say, let the colloquium include the chairpersons, if possible, of the relevant other portfolio committees so that they can also support from their respective areas. Disaster management planning, seasonal profiling is very important, including early warning. I think I can also submit that, honorable members, we run awareness in a very robust basis with the South African Weather Service. One of the applications that you can tap into now as we're sitting here is called Weather Smart. If you go to Play Store, you can download that Weather Smart app. Every day it will tell you what is going to be the weather in the morning, 2 o'clock, 8 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, 8 o'clock in the evening. On your left you can click your area. Say you want to say Nsata. Type Nsata, it will give you the weather. You can be able to alert them at home that there's a likelihood of a storm. Consider the following factors. That's why we also work with the Department of Education in terms of ensuring that teachers, principals have access to those, and they can release learners early when there's impending events, weather events. We also have examples of various community-based disaster reduction programs which honorable members may want to visit, such as the smoke alarm in informal settlement that has been installed, removal of alien invasives. What we discover, honorable members, is that in some areas, we don't necessarily deal with drought, but we deal with water scarcity, which is driven by climate change, and the infestation by alien invasives, such as your water, such as your prosopis, such as compass grass, and so on and so forth, depleting water, including some of the pine species. So we work with environmental affairs to remove those species, particularly the catchment areas, so that there can be underground water recharge. We are currently implementing in Northern Cape, Northwest, here in Tuevaterskloof in the Western Cape, targeting pine and prosopis species. You will learn about prosopis species that it can go as deep as, in Northern Cape, they say 75 meters, and it draws a lot of water. The roots can go as deep as 75 meters. What I've read from the Agricultural Research Council is that they have a recorded depth of 57 meters. So I'm talking about anecdotes and what I have read scientifically. So it's a thing that is quite a challenge, and we are removing them so that we can have underground water recharge. To avoid, honorable members, a situation where you drill a borehole as deep as 250 meters, you pay in the region of 300,000, you don't find water. Then it becomes less. We have those cases. You'll see in the figures that will be coming that sometimes we pay 500,000 for a borehole. You ask your question, why? Because we go very deep, and a bit wide in terms of diameter. So that is one critical intervention that we are undertaking. I will also not go into everything here, and just to say, climate smart agriculture, as is reflected there, is also one aspect that we are practicing through Department of Agriculture, Rural Development and Land Economy. You are going to see photos that illustrate that aspect. The funding arrangements, as I indicated, COGTA is not the first line of defense in terms of funding. Sectors must do that, but we have a disaster grant that we activate when sectors have complied. And those disaster grants are municipal disaster relief grants and the provincial disaster relief grants to deal with emergency needs. And the next one is municipal disaster recovery grant. This municipal disaster recovery grant is for infrastructure repairs or reconstruction that will take more than 3 months. I can give an example. We were busy with repairing dolomitic sinkholes in Merafong area that was caused by underground inundation. And government released from this grant 180 million. As they spend 180 million, the sinkholes just increased. That's what increasing. We had to allocate 42 or so million over the MTF to make sure that we make follow-ups. So we are still, the work is still happening in that area. But of course we know the solution for that area might actually be something different from that referring. If the area, particularly Kutsung, is 90% dolomitic, according to report. So it's an area that also requires. So that's the principle in terms of the funding, that before we can release funding, firstly we check whether prevention and mitigation measures were taken. So if it's about agricultural drought, for instance, or hydrological drought, a request comes to COGTA for funding. We are going to say, as the sector taken prevention and mitigation measures, so evident. Could this disaster have been avoided or minimized had prevention and mitigation measures been taken? Whether it is reasonable to expect that prevention and mitigation measures? So we'll ask all those questions that are underlined there, honorable members, and whether there's also no double dipping. You might find that some infrastructure is insured, and then the request for money, and that will then be a challenge. Summary of the summary of disasters and government assistance to affected communities. These slides that show since the inception of the grant, this is how much has been allocated and for what. Firstly, you can see financial year 2011-12, 47 million was allocated to Proctor, and 32.3 million was allocated to Mpumalanga to deal with flooding damages. And then 2013 was in our allocation, but 73 was allocated to Eastern Cape, KZN, Limpopo, Mpumalanga for flooding damages. So you can see flooding is one of the common phenomenon that we have to deal with. The list goes on and on. You can see that sinkhole formation, I mentioned 118 million for Gauteng for 2016-17, and of course 18-19 in terms of the MTF allocation. So this is just how much we spent. Honorable members, I thought maybe I shouldn't just go through each one of them, but you can see the dominant hazards that are costing state money. That means development, proactive development interventions should begin to say, how do we withstand drought or flooding? Because it's really a common hazard that the country has been facing. Of course, drought as well. And now the next slide is what we don't have, it's just photos. These photos are showing, honorable members, what has just been done recently. You can see this is July, 4 July 2019 in the country. Following the pronouncement by the former Minister of Finance, it was in February 2018, where he indicated that government will allocate 6 billion to drought and other emergencies. And the government indeed in October 2018 allocated an amount of 3.4 billion. For the whole country to deal with drought in all its forms. Because drought has got four typologies. The first one is agricultural, the second one is hydrological. Agricultural is this as it affects farming in terms of production issues, the whole value chain. And then hydrological is now water in the dam, water in the river, no longer there, the pipes can go dry. And then socio-economic is where now you see it affects the hospital, it's beginning to affect the rest of our communities. And then the other perspective is meteorological drought, where we look at the focus generally to see in the medium to long term we will not be receiving any rain. So these are some of the successful projects which honorable members can visit. This is in Limpopo, the Drupte Communal Livestock Project. They have received support, you can see, through boreholes, and the community is receiving livestock is receiving water. And this at least contributes to livelihood enhancement in those communities. The next one is BNJ Mixed Farming Project in Mudimwele, also in Limpopo. This has just been installed. You can even see some measure of production there. And as I indicated, we have photos for the better part of the country. There's a meeting taking place now at national level where heads of provincial centers are presenting reports. So we will not reflect all provinces, we just reflected those that we have photos close by. And this one you can see is Boom Prayers and Product Seeds in Mpumalanga that were distributed. And Product Seeds in Northwest, you can see. And also no-till planter and demonstration in KZN. No-till is to make sure that you work the soil in such a way that it doesn't release carbon and then end up contributing to climate change. So we purchased through agriculture this no-till planter and there was this training and handing over. One other interesting one just around the corner is that in Dragonstein municipality last year in Cape Town, we have just launched water treatment plant that was funded through the disaster grant. You can see in 2018 at the earthworks were happening, preparations were happening, and eventually it's operating. Very massive one contributing to reducing hydrological drought. This next one is in the Northern Cape. You can see the main objective of the project is to drill and equip two boreholes, construction of pump mains, and connection to the existing infrastructure. So this is happening in Pitchley Gaferma, Gaferma municipality. It started in August 2018, and the budget is that much. It can also be visited, honorable members. The next one. The report is being presented today. My apology, we will update, but it should be very advanced, but the report is being presented today. Okay. The next one, I indicated that we can only adapt if we practice conservation agriculture measures in terms of conservation conservation agriculture, the no-till, and also what we call mixed agricultural processes. So these are some of the things that have been distributed. You can see they are very new. We call crop conservation agriculture equipment for drought adaptation. These are funded from the Strayford Hospital that the state has released. You can see in November, Mr. Makale driving his tractor that was also contributed through this intervention, and pulling a no-till equipment, and that there was on the 30th of July a commemoration of the International Grain Combat Desertification in that province, and all the farmers that received support and others were in attendance of that session. The challenges in implementing the grant, honorable members, is that recurring disaster damages within the country aggravated by other factors result with dependency on grants. Disaster funds implemented within normal budget and financial processes. What we mean here, honorable members, is that when you transfer money on the, say, 25th of March to a provincial government department, there has to be processes of appropriating that money in the vote. And we have had experiences where without that money gets returned to National Treasury while we are dealing with a disaster situation. The other issue is the rollover issues. We apply for rollover, say, the municipality applies in August. They have to wait until October to get a response. And if they have not committed, often the applications get declined. But our DG is leading us in engaging DG of National Treasury to address those challenges. Capacity constraints also within spheres of government to plan and monitor the project, and also funds being surrendered. And also, there's also challenges in some areas where funds are used for unintended purposes. And the infrastructure backlog, not everything that is a crisis is a disaster. We find that in some cases, there's a challenge because there's a backlog or the infrastructure has not been upgraded. So those issues are brought to disaster management while they are basically service delivery issues, and it really creates a burden on the truck or on the ground. Remedial measures that we are currently engaging on are indicated that we are engaging National Treasury. So promotion of disaster reduction measures is what we do. Engagement with National Treasury are indicated. This is currently leading us on that. Stakeholder engagement, strengthening of monitoring. We try by all means to follow the rank, and now the team will also be coming up with a schedule today of where are we going to go also to observe what has been done, and continuous roadshows and awareness to our stakeholders. As I indicated, we will also lead the honorable members with a request for support, and the request for support tells you that honorable members should in encouraging compliance with the provisions of the Act by organs of state. All organs of state and other role players to ensure compliance with the Act. Advocate for institutionalization. Where there are no heads of centers or focal points, disaster management in certain departments, they should support us in that. Encourage provinces and municipalities and state entities to give priority attention to disaster management and fast services. in the country. And concluding remarks, effective disaster reduction requires sustained political buy-in and support. With your support, will and thought leadership, we will really move a long way to risk-proofing service delivery and development in the country. And we say this because in some of the areas, hard decisions have to be made. If X community has to be relocated because they are located in a risk area, you need political buy-in. Not easy just to do it at technical level. You can provide a short technical report, but action has to come from the higher office. And that's why I always use this example. There was a community that settled in Babsfontein in France, in Delma. People really did a geotech assessment. They realized they are on a serious colonistic risk. They had to relocate them. They are now in Davidson, that community. They did not resist because processes were followed. And clearly that's what will have to happen for that day, river, and other areas that you see in the country. The other contributing remarks, different departments across the spheres of government have a role to play. Let me go to the last part one. Communities, including traditional leaders, must be placed at the center of all risk reduction measures. Traditional leaders are quite key in also mobilizing communities using indigenous knowledge in terms of disaster risk management issues. And finally, a capable, resourced, and well-equipped national center is also fundamental for the country to effectively address disaster management and facilities. So we are also saying we have shared how we are currently resourced, and we also need support to move to the next level. And I think once we have done all this, we can avoid all this. Thank you very much.
No disaster yet.
Thank you.
this one here for on and off.
Yeah, this one you can reduce.
Generally, all three of them.
Okay.
In terms of infrastructure, it's sort of there and then I'll go with the doctor. In terms of I think I raised it earlier when we were in Caledon as well, in terms of infrastructure and the planning thereof, in terms of the inequality that's being created and the risk that goes with it. If there's sufficient planning, and I know that most of the municipalities do not have a type of management plan. Again, if you go and look at the Auditor General, they do not have a master plan. 49% of them do not have a water plan. And I'll tell you, a few of them have sewage plants, and even their discussions, the Auditor General says 72% of them actually have a state of the infrastructure that you have. So in that view, if you look, especially in Matasano, again, it's my background. In Kuma, there were a water tower built. The water tower was built lower than the lowest house. So how do you create infrastructure of 95 million if that can't even work as soon as the water tower built within school? Less than 10% can't contribute to the water. Then, in terms of planning on new infrastructure, when we plan new infrastructure, we also look at the current infrastructure. The infrastructure we are building is being built on top of the other infrastructure. So, if the current infrastructure is failing, then the new infrastructure will fail as well. So, we need not only to create new infrastructure, but the maintenance as well. In terms of disaster, some of it has been answered, but in terms of your equipment in your firehouse, I know it is the local municipality's responsibility to have you there, but do the department do an overview of it? Because I know most of the local municipalities do not even have equipment in their firehouse. Then in terms of sinkholes, all contained sinkholes, it's already there for 4 years. We've been quite loud about the problem that sinkhole is about 50 meters deep and 25 meters wide, more or less, I think. And to give you an idea, the whole of Parliament can fit into that sinkhole. And yes, on the N12, that says that it's going to come to the season as well, and we look at prevention. It's quite a big hole on terms of one of our national routes. To give you quick background, disaster management in Dr. Kenneth Kurunda is quite operational. I was on that committee as well. Everything was put in place in terms of Sunroll, Midball, the local municipality, the district municipality. Everybody had signed it except for Matasano. Can we just check why it's Matasano had not signed it? Then, falls in those reverses, Midball, if you look at Northwest, everybody, or every city tries to think more to provide water. We have certain water boards, or like Midfall at the NTC, that can provide water from the sauna right through to Mafeking with one pipeline. You do not even need a pump because of the gravity of the Northwest infrastructure and land. Why do not we, rather than look at infrastructure that can assist in providing sustainable water to our communities from just a sinkhole. Every time we have a drought and a bore becomes a problem. I know there's a big problem, especially in Northwest, where bores, the whole physics is being used to dump become stagnant and then it causes all the problems as well. So that's only my input. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. My first set of questions are about the integrated urban development planning, that aspect of the presentation. We've heard quite a few references to the district-based service delivery model, and I understand Cabinet has approved it. It's been discussed with the provincial premiers. When are we going to see a more detailed presentation on that model and its implications? I think it's important because we keep referring to it, and obviously it's an important aspect of the strategic thinking of government, but it's you know, we haven't seen a proper document other than the overhead references and presentation. Then a specific question about the integrated urban development grant that was given to the 5 municipalities identified in the 2018-19 financial year, for municipalities that financial year is over, if I'm correct. Can we get an indication in just a little bit more detail, and I'm trying to see the gentleman who did that presentation. Ah, there we go. Can we get a more detailed exposition of the requirements for that grant? Because again, the PowerPoint is failing us. It's just, you know, one of the bullet points is stable management. What exactly does that mean? Another bullet is audit findings. What is the, you know? So just a clearer, more detailed exposition of the requirements to qualify for that grant for the intermediate municipalities. The second question is, how are those municipalities faring on your dashboard in terms of spending and performance on that grant? It was Mogale, Stellenbosch, Drakenstein, I think. How are those five doing? And where can we as a committee look to is that information available on a quarterly basis, maybe, to see how you know, because we can wait for the financial statements, we can wait for the financial year end, but I'm sure you guys have a dashboard to check up on how things are going in the short to medium term. Then, Chair, last question to disaster management. Obviously, a big part of the work that you do is to raise red flags or to warn government departments of where potential disaster risks arise. So it's not just a reaction, as I understand it, it's not just a reaction unit, it is also a risk mitigation, as a risk mitigation or a risk prevention function. Is there a risk register of disasters that the National Management Center is looking at? Can we access it? You know, for example, what are the three biggest vulnerabilities in Gauteng? Because I think policymakers will find information like that useful, not just the government departments involved, but policymakers in general. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. I have two questions for DMC and a couple for the Integrated Urban Development Framework. It's very alarming that the Northern Cape doesn't have a DMC or a DM framework developed. I'm from the Northern Cape, and currently we're facing the biggest drought in 50 years. How can we enforce the Northern Cape Executive to comply with the legislative requirements for a functioning DMC? And how can DCOG nationally help to speed up drought relief funding to the Northern Cape? Because farmers are now so indebted that they cannot secure loans to buy seed, and farm workers are at risk to losing their jobs. And then I want to know, in my hometown of Loriefontein, we've drilled 30 boreholes in 2017. And the Department of Water and Sanitation insist that all underground water resources must first be exhausted before they can intervene. Now, reliance on underground water as the only source is very disastrous, and I foresee a water shortage in 80% of the local municipalities in the Northern Cape before 2030. These disasters can be avoided, and we need to relook at water usage, because currently, almost all over South Africa, we are flushing drinkable water down the toilets. How can we assist with that? And then my question to the Integrated Urban Development Framework. I come from the Namakoland, the biggest district municipality geographically in South Africa. It's one district municipality, and it's bigger than KwaZulu-Natal, Mpumalanga, the Western Cape, and Limpopo together. So it's covering 440,000 square kilometers, of which my constituency is half. And we have one regional town and city planner. Can you see how disastrous that is? How do municipalities then address the issue of lack of skills and human expertise with regards to spatial planning and land use management? Now, on a local level, councils are only known to, they only know SPLUMA. Now, the problem with SPLUMA tribunals, however, is that the tribunal consisting of a town or city planner, a legal expert, a land conveyor, and the officials take the decisions. But when appeals arise, the council must handle the appeals. And councils often lack the legal expertise and knowledge with regards to town planning, and the MMs lack the capacity to guide and advise councils on these matters. How can we improve both leadership and administrative capabilities, especially with regard to appeal procedures? And what plans do you have in place to promote land value capture and speed up the security of land tenure? And how do you propose to improve intergovernmental relations for the acquisition or transfer of state land? And what strategic plans are in place to fix the non-alignment between planning and housing development that continues to exist? And how will you upscale integrated intergovernmental development planning? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will first start with the Integrated Urban Development Framework presentation. When you look at the presentation, they have indicated a very burning issue in the country about the inequality, where you'll find out that you have areas like special planning inequality, where you have a situation like your Sentin and your Alexandra. And then on their short-term priorities, they indicated that they will align special sectoral and strategic plans in the short term. But my question is, all these priorities that they have, when you look at them, are they going to be able to do it through a short term? The reason why I'm asking is because when you look at majority of our municipalities, they do not have sectoral plans. They don't have your special plan. They don't even understand. They don't even have your land use management policies in the municipality. And even when you look at the IDPs of the municipalities, are not credible because we don't have sectoral plans. We just farm stuff when we do the IDPs. So mine is to say, what is the reality of the short-term priorities based on the current situation that we have? And then the other matter is on the... on the implementing the IUDG in the municipality, the current in the municipality. I just want to check to say, when they speak of the implementing, which phase are they with these municipalities where they have indicated that they are implementing? And also, the grant that has been allocated, because I can see that there's one where they say mining, manufacturing, service center. So what is the difference between this funding, that grant that they are giving the municipality? The reason why I'm asking that is that I'm from this one, Matabe, where you know that our economy has drastically declined because we're only depending on mining sector. Now that the mining has declined, the economy of the whole area has declined. We also have some towns which are turning into old towns. Now we have to look for Plan B to say, in the next coming 20 years, when this one of mining died completely, what is it that we are going to do? And I can see that they are saying they are in the implementing of this grant in that municipality. Hence, I'm asking to say, when you are saying you are in the implementing stage, which stage are you really at? And what is it that you are doing at that stage? The other one will be for disaster. On the disaster, I just want to check, like, the challenge that we have in our municipalities, that in the local municipalities, we don't have disaster management centers. We only have on the district, in most provinces. And when you look at the stuff that we have in our district, we are running short of staff that deals with disaster. And when you go to the local municipality, you realize that the councillors and the officials, they do not know which procedures to be followed when they are faced with disaster. I'm talking this from the experience. In Free State, we hardly experience disaster in the local municipality, except the drought on the agricultural side. So earlier this year, we were faced with the flooding in Machabe. And the process was just running haphazardly, so everybody was doing everything. It's only after 2 days, when the disaster was intensive, where we were able to say, let's form disaster management, let's do this and that and that. So my question is to say, what are you doing to this local municipalities to assist them so that at least they are ready should any disaster happen to them? And then the last one will be on the, I think it was the smart city, the city, what was building a city. I must confess, Chair, that when I was looking at that presentation before they presented, I was a bit discouraged to say they are going to waste our time this one. Because when you were going through the presentation, you were just seeing like your figures, your, it was not that much detail. Until that time when they were presenting, and then we realized, well, in fact, they have what we need to ensure that we turn the city around. And as they were doing the presentation, they also reminded us that you can't develop a city through the IDP, which is just a five-year plan. Realistically, 5 years will not turn things around. We need to do more than that. They also reminded us that there's a need for government to think about the new strategies of redesigning our state so that we can make a positive impact. And my plea would be, at least we have an extensive meeting where we all come together and share ideas so that we can be able to come up with that plan of redesigning and ensuring that we turn our cities around. And they also mentioned the issue of spatial planning and land use and the LED strategies, of which I think it is important because most of our municipalities, we don't have LED strategies. You check municipal A, B, C, D in the same environment where you know that the economic drivers in this area is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. But when you look at the strategies that the municipalities have in that area, their priorities are different from the economic drivers of that area. When you look at their strategies, it's different from the one of the province. It's different from the one of nature. So I think we must also try to find a way of aligning our economic strategies in the local municipality, to the one of the province and national, based on the economic drivers of the areas that the municipality is. So I think if we can also ensure that working closely with them and the municipalities, it will also assist us. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. Mine is very, very short. Chair, it's on confronting spatial inequality. No, Chair, this is the indication that there is a need for the expropriation of land without compensation in the country. In that, you can see the demonstration of the spatial planning and the influx of those areas, you know, in terms of the seriousness and the urgency of the situation in South Africa. In terms of the development of the spatial spatial planning, how is it that we are going to deal with the influx and the migration to cities as presented here? If we are not dealing with the question of the distribution of land, how is it that we are going to develop the township, a township economy, in terms of industrialization in South Africa, if there is a distinction between town and the township area, where there is no economic activity at all? The land neither belongs to the municipality nor belongs to anyone. And how is that going to happen in South Africa? Is it possible for us to be talking about such issues when there is no allocation of the land in terms of how it's supposed to be distributed? Secondly, Chair, is on the question of the migration again, and the rural municipality. You know, the question of the treatment of rural municipalities and the cosmopolitan municipalities, this is not a difficult one. In the process of migration, there you live a lot of people in the rural areas that are actually not having any social activity, not having any economic activity, not having any employment opportunity. And you are saying here by 2030 you will be having 71% of people who are residing. And against what I have asked Chair for that, in terms of the allocation of land, how is it that it is possible that we are going to be dealing with these issues in terms of what is? And why is it that it is only townships that are actually having areas where you are dumping the dumping sites? I'm just interested. Why is it that it is townships that is, if we are to speak to Dr. Dawood's presentation of providing a conducive healthy environment, why is it that it is only townships that have dumping areas? And I think that those are my questions.
starting with the IUDF,
If you look at the short-term road, in particular, the one slide that relates to 2011, the short-term road, the overall presentation, you see that when after now embedded in the actually, when you implement it, in particular areas. That is quality of the food, which is 300 million out of the as a result of the land market related to the land. The critical issue is that the best question is that all of this. The whole ecosystem is underpinned by traditional leaders. And because the land that was set aside for development was underpinned, so it could not be developed. So the developer actually mitigated. Then it was. Then we started to pay the developer because the land was under. So the community, they came into the responsibility. And then as a result, and that left it to good work to be not for us. Because the land claims were not in the problem. Now the issue, critical also that area is under land. You have also a critical problem that is difficult to hold out and implement. Let's look, given that apparently we have a situation where so spatial planning is a challenge in those settings because you still have an issue that is not open with the traditional people who are saying they were not part of this room. And they have an avenue to do themselves in that issue. And now which means this would be an incentive in actually realizing some of these short-term goals, which would mean that a part of this is going to require a focus on those particular goals by the city network as well as this branch in focusing on those areas so that the issue of development is resolved, so that Pluma could be prospered, so that those municipalities. As I know now, KSC is heavily under litigation because some of you have seen this as an opportunity to make money. They are lobbying people to bring in to litigate the municipality because the land is not there. So that's the situation that needs an attention so that as part of this is part of this building in this intermediate system for being part of this UIS process. Also, in one slide, it indicates that I think it's a disaster. No, no. I was looking at the number of the intermediate. The candidate is one of the candidates in this intermediate citizens where they want to why are those not being as part of the intermediate? Maybe they are certain situation which are part of the intermediate. That I would need to understand. Neighboring first country coming to disaster. On disaster indeed, disaster management is indicated that And then, therefore, that is the community. And also, I was looking at the institutional arrangement, the workforce at national, and looking at this huge work that they are undertaking, both international and within the region. Is a branch, I don't know whether it's a branch, resource, both in terms of human capital and otherwise, to ensure that they actually carry out this huge task of coordinate disaster management in the community. That's one question. The other one is that we have here in terms of risk reduction that we have some municipalities that are situated in some disaster area that are. This reminds me of the small municipality of Kosovo that has been flooded recently. And as a result, that it doesn't have adequate infrastructure that is exposed to climate change. And they said that that proposal of some settlements there are on street areas that are often contracted by landslides. And he was raising the issue that there needs to be a political move. Because to me, without any expertise, those communities that are supposed to be relocated in the clearly, they are confronted by flood and many of the assessments. But besides that, my initial point was that the flood and the damage that it caused was a reflection that indeed we do not have the real these assets infrastructure to mitigate or to prevent a leak, the disaster in that which means then is calling on how then do you coordinate other stakeholders and other state to ensure that no competition is going to be of providing that particular infrastructure so that municipality is highly vulnerable because we need to understand it. It's likely that two ways are changing at any time. So it's condemned to that on that particular level. The last thing would be that the question of the post disaster recovery response. We get the recent disaster in Japan. What is still the need? Interviewed in terms of police, and he was raising the issue here of geological hazard. I saw how the day collapsed when the ground was flooded. And then I was thinking, could this be have been allowed to step here to this particular place? Which has got a stream flowed in the whole house and the whole land collapsed. Then it said that area is a geological hazard. If it has not been settlement there, unless then we actually bring the infrastructure to ensure that it would be clear to such measures.
just follow us on a small scale of pressure.
Yeah.
So, which means that it, then, to what extent will we out-respond? The travel around the area that has been affected by the recent flood in the and assembly. I've learned that some people are still out of church. We also throughout the country. Our disaster, post disaster recovery from the church. I'm not disaster. We are still waiting for and evaluating the processes
of you and making sure that things are happening accordingly. You know, because sometimes you find out that we are building new townships, but at the end of the day, there is no development for people to get employment. People are traveling far from where they stay because of the issue of the transportation or unplanned strategic plan for the development. Then again, on the issue of how South Africa responds to the organization, about how to present the images of people that they are stuck near to the loan houses, you find out that there is also the infighting among the two groups. Do we have any mechanism of stopping this? Because those people, they are moving from rural area to urban area, coming to seek for a better life. And then if things are not happening, of course, there will also people from the north out complaining that this is reducing, you know, their bondage, you know, prices and all those things. But I also think that we need also to come with the mechanism of how are we going to rescue those people. As my colleague mentioned earlier on, that the issue of land without appropriation, I think it should be the order of the day, and I think we should speed up that process. Because as of now, there is so many insights. I saw them from the province where I come from. Then we insight, thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. My colleague has all my questions. The big advantage is to be the last speaker in that. But Chairperson, I'm also concerned with comments on the
you cannot be held on the time.
I'm not saying you are wrong, sir. I'm just saying.
Unless you will change the position, you will
lose your mind. You love your mind. Jefferson, as I'm saying, I'm concerned with my comrades, with my colleagues. But firstly, let me greet our chair of the committee and two deputy ministers and all the on my and my colleagues on my right hand side. Say hello. And all the representatives from the all departments and other directors. Good morning. Chair, my question could be on the restriction of the on the urban development. First one I'm trying to the settlement to rebuild the cities that are always there. One thing that they are creating, as my colleague Matthew said, the crowd to the city from rural, from the people throughout the rural areas. Because what I was thinking myself, I was thinking that because those cities are already there, they need just to be clean, that everything is fine. Why don't they go back to the rural and create new cities there so that people of rural, they can get to work? They want to create jobs that have been created for a long time ago. Chema, go and create work jobs in rural areas where people are moved from far, where they are staying in rural and come here in the city. It would be a good ideology, that one. But if you come and tell us that the focus is the things that are there, it doesn't make sense to me. I'm telling you, in my opinion, it doesn't make any sense to me, because people from rural are suffering. When are we going to do new things as government? Come with a new thing, innovative and creative. Always we are busy silungisa lokho okudala kukhona. Why? We cannot meet the problem of job problem if we are not going back deep rural and build malls there, so that people they get to work there near where they are staying. It will even avoid people to come and build new sheds in every space like it's open. Because they want them to stay and looking for the opportunity in the town, in the cities that you said you are going to build. Myself, I'm saying, and I will repeat it this issue until I die, because I'm a rural girl. I know the frustration of the people who are staying in rural. I don't know, maybe it's because this small town of rural area, they don't have more grants. It's because it can show that you are relying on the grant of the people, because you always mention a grant. But it won't be a good suggestion to leave people who are staying in the rural area alone. It won't. Because when all of us here are politicians, when it comes to campaign, we go to those people. We know where they are staying. Yes, but when it comes to development, rural area, they are not part of the development. I don't know what is happening to the department or to us, the government. But I can say, because many things have been mentioned, chairperson, that's to close. Don't you think that this issue, it will cost more people to move away from the land, come to the city, and make a disaster there? Because these charts, they are disasters. The disaster management must manage those things, because those are the disaster ones that is managed. To improve economy in urban area, people who are staying in urban area, they are all advantage. But the people who are disadvantaged, they are people who are in rural area. Can't we improve our economy in rural areas and make sure that people are getting the better life there, so that they cannot want to move to this city and make chaos there? Can I ask you, when you say which areas do you consult people? because you didn't mention it here. But even if you mention, you didn't mention any rural development that you hold and contrast to today that what did they want to you to come and help them. In the disaster management, that's that out. I'm not talking about our town. I'm talking about that out. We have our own, but there is another one to do. Do you have enough or if you have enough time to respond in the emergency? Why I'm asking this chair? Did anybody buy this or that? There were four kids who died inside because the Ivory Party fire extinguisher says they don't have enough time. One car was out. Remember, in Ivory Park, many areas are touched, which means we need more cars to assist our people. I'm just mentioning this topic, but there are many who died inside in the group. Because in the cooking room, they are pulling over by the Ivory Park. It says we mentioned it. Actually, you can also see the two stations there. Because the station that I'm talking about is in MR3, next to police station. There is no any station here in Rabba Rish, at Anana, at 4, next to that police station in Rabba Rish. You're supposed to get one of them. Why I'm saying you're supposed to get one of them? Because from MR3, Uzala, and Engage, it's very far. Even if the car was there, he would find these people dead because the road is too small, traffic is bad. We're supposed to get two and people of us because we have a huge community there in every bus station. Yes, in Rabba Rish police station, not why? In Johannesburg, as we said in Johannesburg, you don't know how. I think they must help Sky about nothing. And then also, Chair, the area, I'm going to ask you that. And I think this issue of realignment, it needs to be prioritized. But we must prioritize the issue of realignment because these tasks are too congested. They're too congested. If the Kisham Lilo, if fire extinguisher cannot go in and help people there. I'm talking about the Rachel Flow for every day. Those over every lane, many churches they are failing. Many. No, those over every lane. Every lane to Hannah. Every lane in municipality. Metal, yes. Every lane metal. Amateur are failing everything. If you are targeting the city, I want to see the realignment each and every area. Where there is congested in Kuzi, I I want you to realize how important this program is in the future.
Thank you, sir. Mine is very little. I won't take time. In fact, the presentation about the land growth my aim is to make it in a strategy out of it. That government is owning it a lot of it. It's a lot, which is owned by the government, especially all over South Africa. It must be built up, giving the people that land, using expropriation without compensation, because it belongs to them. It belongs to them as a country. So that at least we can stop this influx of people from the rural areas to urban areas, because it's just because the rural, the urban area itself, they will never expand. The urban areas will never expand just because of the land which is occupied by the shack dwellers. I think that will be the best of all, because this one not needs no one from us, even to the members. It's just the president can even announce and make a declaration and say, look at this, the land which is belong to us must be given to the cities, so that the cities can develop. While I'm still fighting about the land,
and the second step will be
why you go so far? Because our land already, as in Ngonyama, we are sharing with the people. Only the main thing is that the municipality, they don't want to cooperate with an Amakhosi to develop the areas. They want to make their decision without incorporated of the Amakhosi. Otherwise, we are not against the development. But the development must come on a right way, on a right direction. So we must be contacted, and then we must sit down and talk, and then we'll come to a conclusion by saying that we agreed this land will be developed. No problem to us. Thank you very much.
Thank you. My turn to
I have to say that I get this impression that this is such a waste of time. We need to have a committee meeting amongst our council officials. I want to ask us at some point to plan the way ahead.
The
it would have been much better if we could have had 4 or 5 minutes of LEDs coming here. The report on what they've done, why they're fucking up. You know?
Absolutely.
Do you have a copy of the agenda?
No.
Do you know what else is on?
Check my email.
No, I'll check my email. I don't know if I got it.
And then from Mukale City and Silamela, you said you have presented the report for community. Our other interaction with the demarcation board, we have learned even the department, at times the department couldn't deliver on their quota because of the sale of municipalities to homes in time. I hope you're not open-ended. You have given them time frame to comment on those reports because if you touch on it, then it is delay a process. Shouldn't be an open-ended to say they need to comment. Normally, you would be told about cancel resolution, approval, that will take a lot of time. I hope your determination is going to monitor that. There is a slide that also deals with the application. Honorable friends have raised the issue to say you need to expand the minimum criteria. But you identified the human to participate on it. And then the other one, I understand the municipality first needs to apply to be classified as ICM. And then if you have a decision wherein non-ICM municipality would apply, you can clearly understand that the ICM communicated for the municipality. Municipality don't think everybody must just apply because it's a grant that's coming. That's why you read those numbers in 2019. Then the other issue again, I think you need to share with us what is the criteria, because as we do our oversight, for the municipality to qualify for classification, what are the criteria? What honorable brings to the raise was about those that were interested and qualified. This is the criteria that we need, and that's the one that we try to explain in bullet points. Then, I'm raising this because out of the 59, only 5 qualified. It also comes back to entire community thing to say, because those 39, I think the mere fact that they identified them, they qualify to be in that criteria that qualifies. And then I'm again worried, get worried, because for the current application that we are having, we are telling that only let's agree to 39 that we identified, you already allocated 5. It means you have 34 that still qualify, and then out of the 34, only got to public education. And maybe in this case now, yeah, I think it's a clear indication that something is not right in the matter. As I have communicated on how we deliver this message to this municipality, that needs to be addressed. And then the other one that I need to raise again is on urban safety partnership. I think I've raised the issue of the urban development. Of the urban development that are taking place in Joanesburg. Then, where do we locate the IEC, the sort of the LEC, in this presentation? I don't hear you talking about this, the LEC that we discovered. I thought this should have been the document that will also talk to the issues of the local economic development, which the Constitution and the World Paper. On this. And then the other issue that one needs clarity on is with regard to how this urban development is going to resolve the tension between the increased investment in slum prevention, participatory democracy, and the pro-poor tenure policy. And the issue that I'm raising again is based on supporting the local economy. And also then the issues of the climate change and then also prioritization of infrastructure. I think you raised an issue where in the situation where you find that it's honorable very rare that you find the situation where new infrastructure is built on top of infrastructure. So I think these are the measures that we need to deal with. And as I go through the document, they also seem to be insufficient in on the link between these program in the regional development plan. I don't get it, like, where is it, where the link is. I think the end is in there. I know the specific method, and then the organization works much better. And I think on the disaster, we need just to communicate to them, follow up with the national president recommendation. You remember, 20% has been the NHM and the Digital Commission recommended that the special national disaster fund for risk management to be established to cater for aspects like climate change and adaptation, disaster risk reduction and intervention, as well as disaster relief and recovery. I think this will also go a long way in addressing the unfunded mandate complaint that is registered by some of the local municipalities. And then I think we can get the problems of environmental degradation, especially in local municipalities. Honorable Minister, there's nothing that I can do whenever I go into the rural community. We can't get to the station for the littering that we see throughout our area, I think it's an area of concern for all of us. So, and this is that also going to the issue of contamination. Whenever you move your place, you saw that in the river, there is a piece of what makes that we always be like, it will allow pollution the river. And then I wonder, Dr. Xiao, if you are ready, because now there is a piece of water tankering. The other day, I looked at the water tank from one of my supervisors, and it was just taking water from the river that the river thing has been using water in the river. And it's going to affect people. It's not going to be purified anywhere. I'm raising this issue to you. That's why there's a lot of cases of food poisoning at home. People go to the funeral, they just all go like because of the water that they are drinking. So I think what I'm trying to say is here is to put a point in all fairness that they have. To the disaster threat of home, maybe let it be. Are we going to respond given the level of national security? National, provincial, and even the central. But the local municipality, if the Bible way, has the issue that honorable things are avoiding. You hear the people of Yabentan and Nadine to say that we have been promised by the Republic, we are going to get out. I know there was a grant some years ago in 2004 about housing to focus on disaster, because they were even called disaster housing process. But as it says, there are people who have been waiting to get all these things in the but the issue is our state of regulation, the state of regulation of municipality. I've looked at the slide already in showing the human resource capacity. If the others are led by junior officer, the little thing says the federated group to put it on an international level, at the director level, the staffing, including the staffing component of the whole system in the department. Yes, the support that we do because we don't send the entire team, but as a county, our state of readiness of the county, so we do not just about our four provinces. I'm just giving a good question of funding. In order to get more to the point, to the disaster in this
country. Thank you. Chair, I'm going to try to use a short slow of voice and hope that it's okay for the after. Oh, okay.
And the central point there is that, and I think as the good doctor says, people or human beings are anthropological by nature. They will move. And I'm saying this now, it has been said before, it will always be said. Once a human being sees a greener pasture on the other side of the fence, they will stand up and they will move. So we can never stop migration, So we need to disabuse ourselves from thinking that we are going to create apartheid borders of some sort, as apartheid did, and stop others from moving from Transkei to Cape Town, or from Transkei to Ethiopia, or whatever the case might be, or to Botswana. It's not going to happen. So it's quite important that at least what we should do with urbanization and migration is to try to manage it rather than to stop it. Now that's a totally different attitude that we get to have. Can you stop people from moving from rural areas? It's not practically possible. And here's a point that I would like to also make in relation to how we should also understand our urbanization as a country. So urbanization is a term that we have stolen from outside of the country, but our urbanization has different characteristics. Our urbanization is characterized by poverty, so it's going to be different from the urbanization that was experienced in Europe, for instance, where the term comes from. Our urbanization is not happening at the time of the industrial age. In fact, industries in the towns are dying. However, people still go to the city to want to locate there, and yet when they get there looking for home, they do not find the home because those jobs are not there. So it's quite important that when we understand our urbanization, we understand it with our own eyes, not with the eyes of what has happened in previous experiences. Thirdly, our urbanization is happening in the context of an apartheid spatial form, where people come to town, and when they get to town, they're unable to afford the city. Hence, you get many shared slums, because people cannot live and afford in affluent places because they go there in search of. So when we begin to devise solutions that have to respond to our urbanization, it's quite important to understand that our own urbanization is unique. It's an urbanization of a special type, if you may utilize those particular terms. Now, do we have enough planning capacity? In the context, we do not have enough planning capacity. And it's not municipalities, at least it's not municipalities alone that are going to be able to produce the planning capacity that is required to respond to this. Our universities are not producing the type of students that can help the municipality to respond to this. I do not know how do you solve that in a short space of time. But something has to be done about that for it to be able to assist the municipality to respond to this. Here are some examples that I would like to offer that we have documented through case studies about what's happening in urbanization. You have someone that lives in, let's say, Rassenberg. He has a rural home far in the city. That's two homes. And there's lots of movement that takes place there. How does government then respond to that phenomenon of double homes, that equivalent that is there? On the one hand, when that person is in big rural utilities, they do not pay for rent. So that municipality does not have a stable source of income, right? And if they are able to afford the rate in Rustenberg, yes, they do, but in utility they do not pay. So the failure is not utility in municipality. The failure is the failure of the system to support utility municipality politically, to deal with the problem, because the origination of that problem is not in the municipality itself. And yet that particular person demands the same services as a person that is paying rate. Now, for us to expect a single municipality on its own to be able to deal with such a multifaceted and complex program, and it goes even to KFD, if we utilize, in my game, those kinds of problems are there. So there's something, I think, about the entire system of government that one can argue very strongly that the local sphere is still not adequately supported by the system of government. It still assumes that the system of local government is a smaller player in the field. So, Member of Parliament, let me come to the point that you're making. I don't think the issue, and again, this is true case study, I don't think the issue is whether there should be appropriation or whether there should be appropriation with compensation or without compensation. I think the issue that we are raising through research, through the evidence, is that you can't use expropriation alone, whether it's through compensation or not, as a silver bullet. There are going to be other things that you're going to factor in once you have expropriated that land, and whether you pay for it or not. Such as, for instance, the need for long-term planning. Now, long-term city development is not a function of one municipality. I think, as a system, we're not zealous enough to say Johannesburg does not belong to Johannesburg, but it's a country asset. And then respond to it as a country asset that is supposed to drive, or as a city for that matter, as a port city, or any of the municipalities that are so it's quite important that we have some elements of zealousy around what we call areas of production in our country, because anyway, that's where production takes place, and that's where employment is, and that's where most of our youth is. Two, densification. That should be something that you factor once you have appropriated it. So taking land on its own doesn't necessarily solve. And there's many other examples that I think we can gather from the municipalities around us. Is it possible to create? Is it possible? I'll go into the idea around people moving from rural to urban. I'm saying it's not stopping. You can just manage it. But is it possible for us to create jobs in rural areas in the context of climate change, where rural is known for food production? There are serious challenges in rural areas if food production is going to be the mainstay of the economy in rural areas. So the questions that we are going to have to deal with are relatively tough, unfortunately, in relation to the issues that we're talking about. Safe to say, Chair, as I finish, that urban is not about urban areas. It's not about, it's about the entire system as I have attempted to explain what urban really is. Thank you.
Yeah, that's
the
These things no longer working. They're not working.
No, the meeting of land is taking
place. Thank you very much, Honorable Member, for the questions and comments. I'll endeavor to respond to them. And I also and the chair also request that the fire services questions I refer them to the second level. With managing the function just within the context because it will help. So I'll respond to these questions as raised by honourable members. I'll start off with the ones that were raised by honourable member Kroonewald. And regarding the one related to equipment for firefighting, I'll leave that for Dr. Kangale to handle. And then I'll deal with the matter regarding self-conveying sinkholes
also acknowledge that we are aware of that connecting hole, and we have fought with receiving the report. We requested the province to establish a task team, and I'm aware that the task team is in place, involving the Council for Geoscience and chaired by the provincial head of the centre. I will follow up to get a report on how far the process has gone. I think public works, roads and works are also involved. So I'll get a report that we can present an update as to how far the process is. There was also an issue about the water boards. The fact that water boards can supply water, but we often prioritize drilling. This is a matter that honestly can be best addressed by water and sanitation. As you know, the department is the mandate. Whenever we have to intervene on hydrological drought issues, the plans come through water and sanitation, and they will have assessed the hydrological profile of various areas. So can I request that when we, if we happen to have the colloquium or as part of the oversight visit, we will bring all these role players on board so that they are able to answer from their mandate perspective. So it's one that I will leave hanging, is a very important one. I'll refrain for that time. The other issue that was raised by Honorable Brent, it relates to disaster risk, disaster management as a risk prevention measure. It is correct, priorities to prevent risks. And the key question was whether we have a risk register for the country. The answer is yes. We have what we call the National Indicative Risk Profile, where we we profile and map risks. So far we have done lightning risks, the types of lightning that we experience. As you know, there are three types of lightning, the intra-cloud, cloud to ground, and inter-cloud. So we know areas that are susceptible to lightning, certain type of lightning. We also have we have done a storm profiling for the country. We can share that. We have also done hail. We have done snow. As you know, the Drakensberg area is also prone to snow. So we have done the national risk profile. Now what we are doing at the next level, we are going into vulnerabilities. Yes, we have met the hazard, but who is vulnerable to the hazard? So that's what we are currently working on at this moment. But provinces also have profiles for their respective areas, which are now drilling deep into the dynamics of each province. In my wallet there, I just received yesterday a profile for the Western Cape province, where they have identified over 38 hazards that can affect this province, including the tectonic faults, as you know, areas such as Ceres, which are prone to earthquakes. So we have that the risk profiles, and those can be available, honorable members. The other matter that was raised by Honorable Offerman is about Northern Cape. Thank you very much for raising that. Yes, indeed, the framework is not in place. The leadership of the province is working very hard to make sure that this is in place. As I indicated, they have appointed a service provider now to develop a plan for the province. And so that is the process towards at least satisfying that need. But capacity in terms of manpower remains a challenge. And we have been fortunate that after around July, the province appointed head of the center, although it's activity director level, on 1-year contract, but that this is a step in the right direction, and we are supporting them in that respect. The issue of low-risk containers, actually, this is that area. This is an area that require very innovative adaptation measures. I agree with you, water is a challenge in that area, but what was also said to me by one of the officials is that in an area like that, that does not have underground water and even You know, surface water, that's not there, as you will be aware. Underground water is also very overstretched. It is important that even when we construct houses, and the person was saying, you can have a new development that has a bath. A house that has a bath in an area that traditionally will not find bath in the houses. But, you know, some will have a bath in the house. So you preferably have to have a shower so that you save water in those areas. And I felt it was quite an important observation, and this is what should be promoted because the area is just dry. When you read the report by the United Nations Convention to Combat Desertification on land degradation neutrality, it shows that aridity is increasing, particularly in the western part of our country. So in some areas we'll say we're facing drought, but it's aridity that you cannot invest. So the question is, what do you do? That's why we remove prosopis. I think you'll see in Lawrence Fontaine that the project could remove prosopis so that we can recharge underground water. But it will not, it may not necessarily solve the whole problem. And then the next one was by Honorable Director, is no disaster management in local municipalities, and only at district level. Flooding in Machabeng was coordinated haphazardly. You are quite correct, Honorable Member. In fact, as we indicated in the beginning when we produced the presentation, disaster risk management is a intergovernmental function, vertically and also horizontally. So we always say there is no functional fire services or disaster management police in a dysfunctional municipality. So it becomes very important that when the municipality conceptualizes its organogram and actually prioritizes programs, disaster management should be one of them. But through this monitoring and evaluation reports, we do bring to the attention the need to improve on the function. But the responses to that are varying. So that's an area that requires support. We require support from the portfolio committee in terms of oversight and ensuring that the function is taken seriously. We are still obviously guiding the province regarding the flooding damage that occurred in Machabeng, including others, historical others that have been experienced. The next question was by Honorable Mbunga, which was about the fact that the workforce at national level is massive. The workforce is very little and the task is massive, and it's a branch adequately resourced to deal with the responsibility. I think the answer is simple. The team is overstretched, but it's trying everything possible to make sure that we keep the fire burning. So the next issue was that some responsibility location in these areas, yes. Honorable Member Mbunga, indeed, we still find a number of infrastructure that is being located in unsafe areas. I can even tell you, share that there's even a hospital, actual hospital where we have to intervene. Because it is not located in the same area. Let there be intervention. You can demolish one of the hospitals that was only launched in July 2003. 2017 is a flood. We wanted to declare disaster and we went there for that. It cannot be a deal. In which the infrastructure issues so that water can flow easily. So those interventions were put in place. There's a municipality that I know that is built on a wetland. You know, wetlands are the generators of water. As a result of constructing there, it affects, you know, the water generation capacity of that catchment. So it's really challenging that require that we comply with the laws. That's why there's environmental laws like the NIMBA Biodiversity Act and the NIMA, which must actually be complied with before any development can be implemented. Whether we comply or not, it's something else that we need to to critically reflect on. The next question is about the bill by Honorable Member Mpunza. It's about post-disaster response. To what extent have we responded? And should people have... and there are people that are still located in areas that are still accommodated in temporary structures. Let me just use an example of the Eastern Cape, Kinder, and Free State storm of the Easter weekend. We have intervened. Also, called the president had to go to the site, particularly KZN. Three ministers visited Kwaka in the Eastern Cape, in Alfred Nzomo Municipality, which is Minister of Defense, Minister of Public Works, and former Minister of COCTA. But what is the issue there is the coordination of different role players so that they can contribute their resources to dealing with the situation. We have made some breakthrough. Human settlement has allocated 133 million. But the issue that we have, and I think that's what you raised, Honorable Member, is whether are you going to repair those houses where they are, in situ repair. Are you going to repair them where they are? Because where they are, geologically, it's fragile environment. Actually, yesterday, from my meeting in Kairabek, I met colleagues from Human Settlement. I said that we started implementing, they said, not yet, but I said, a big question has to be asked whether you are going to spend the money exactly where our communities are, or there will be a relocation to a safer area. Because if you just build that, you can really imagine what will happen down the line. So, those are issues that require tough decision making if we are to really entrench resilience that we reflect there and ensure that the community bounce forward. Bounce forward means you are not in that state you were. Bounce forward, being in a resilient state by building that better, as it's shown there. So for Eastern Cape, also one there to present the ESCO, I think that brings the special ESCO last week, but there are also interventions from education in terms of dealing with education, with schools, there are interventions to deal with housing, there are interventions to put 17 Bailey bridges to ensure that areas that are cut off, they are Bailey bridges, but Bailey bridges are for the last step, so it means a permanent measure has to be put in place. What we also need to face, and I'll start with the case having been there on the ground also, is that we went to one bridge in Swaka community. The bridge was constructed in 2012. It failed now in 2019. It failed. It just failed. And you look at it, quality aspect. So those are serious questions that we are not there when plans are done, we are not there in the project cycle management. It means we must start there so that we can prevent having to spend repeatedly on one type of infrastructure. Thank you very much. The next one is people that are still accommodated in tents. We are aware of some of those and we are very much concerned about those situations. And it's a matter that is a human settlement matter coordinated by us as a local disaster management center. We have had cases where we received a request from the former scopper in the fifth administration, but in the Altitude 2, Carolina area in Mpumalanga, people who have been in tents since 2012. And 2017 have put together a team to intervene. Human settlement in the province has to reprioritize their funds and then dealt with that so that they can get proper housing. If honorable members come across those cases, we really appreciate receiving that so that we can refer to human settlement and support them in ensuring that they address those challenges. They really pose a challenge from a humanitarian perspective. Honorable Snow raised the issue about safety of people and workers. We have information dissemination sessions. And there was an issue raised about that each municipality or province have a toll-free number. I'm going to leave the emergency number issue to Dr. Kangale to address. But let me respond to the information dissemination. We indeed carry out information dissemination. Municipalities have public awareness programs that they implement. Provinces support municipalities. We also at national level, based on the indicative risk profile that I alluded to in responding to the first two questions, target certain areas where we are going to run awareness programs. So we have that, and as I indicated, areas that we realize are prone to lightning, we will go early. Now as we prepare for the rainfall season, we received a profile for the whole of Sadek in terms of what is likely to be the rainfall pattern. We downscale that through South African Weather Service to the South African context. We already know until March next year what is going to be the rain, what is likely to be rainfall patterns. Then we'll start targeting those areas on our MS programs, including the fire season this time. That's why I indicated that I'm meeting environmental former environmental affairs team tomorrow to prepare aerial support in the country so that we have helicopters that can be activated when the magnitude of a fire or flooding incident require that we use aerial support. Honorable Kize, Mam Kize, Honorable Mam Kize, it was about whether we have enough tasks to respond to emergencies, sightings, Ivory Park, and other areas. I will leave that to Dr. Kangale to address another member. Thank you very much for listening. Then the next one was by the Honorable Chair. The question about follow-up on the Financial and Fiscal Commission 2018 report, we really appreciate that. We will also start investigating the content of the report. I can also just admit that the Financial and Fiscal Commission has also done a research for us, I think 2009 or 10, on the appropriate funding model for the financial. So we will also share that as we prepare for those investments. And then the other issues, the issue of pollution, littering, and environmental degradation, is very, very serious issues. And as you know, these are municipal functions and also some of them are municipal functions and also sector department issues in terms of the local environmental management act, the forestry legislation in terms of tree flow reduction measures and the bylaws of municipalities. So I think that you will address better when you have a forum in the municipality to say in November what are the highest areas in terms of water quality. Yes, because it is not always about water quality. Water quality is the main issue that we face. Now, just give an example, we have a problem of abandoned mines, coal mines in Whitbank, Coronation, where you have rainwater that ends up creating basic mine drainage, and the water goes into Olifant River, through to Lake Mishelo Dam, affecting the marine, sorry, the fish and other species in the river. So those are challenges that we deal with, including ground fires, underground fires in those areas. So we're working on those aspects. With the disaster strike, I'm going to be able to deal with it. I think, honorable members, on this question, let me just assure honorable members that it will depend on the nature of the incident. But as things stand now, the country is one of the best in terms of disaster management capabilities. That is why you can see us sending teams out to Japan, developed countries, Haiti. We are even ready now if we are required to go to the Bahamas. So, just on Sunday we were in Karib Dam in the Free State, where there was an exercise on emergency, multi-scenario emergency response, emergency rescue, to be precise, where University of Johannesburg, Durban University of Technology, the Free State EMS, Nelson Mandela University, that are offering programs on emergency services, EMS in specific, were exercising on how to deal with various scenarios. Confined space, for instance, confined space, high altitude areas. I shared some of the clips with colleagues. So capacity is there, and I've indicated that we have those are teams, special industry teams, which are well resourced to deal with various scenarios. So the country is one of the best. But it will depend on the nature. The reason why we are in the Indian Ocean tsunami is so that we monitor whether there are any risks of tsunami. And the reason why we are in the north in health is to look at epidemics and so on and so forth. So for now, we can be guaranteed. If you look at Section 15.2AA of this Act, Section 15.2AA, with the amendment of our Act in 2015, Parliament inserted a statement that when there is a disaster incident, the National Center has the responsibility or mandate to call upon SNDF and SAPS, swift water rescue, and so on and so forth. So Section 15.2AA says that out. So we have a mandate. Our phones are on anytime if there's a need for such emergency intervention. So I think that is all what I can address. I will request to you, and then Dr. Tanale address the fire to this question. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'm not sure if my voice will.
What I want to mention, honourable members, is that
we have seen that provincial disaster management centers also have a very key role to play in supporting fire services. And if you look at Northwest, since around about 2007, Northwest initiated a provincial grant to support fire departments, and they've been expending about $10 million a year. So they've made a lot of progress because of that particular intervention. The Western Cape has now also started doing something similar, and we've seen that they are also building a lot of capacity. And KZN this financial year would also be procuring fire trucks and so on to support municipalities. So the point I'm making is that, and I think this links DM to the issue of Section 154 of the Constitution, in terms of what is it that we'll be doing as national and provincial government to support fire departments. So that is the work that we are doing. I must, as I move to the next one, I must just also indicate that the challenge you have with the information of whether you are able to respond or you have the right equipment is that it is a bit fluid, in the sense that where you have a fire truck that is functional today, you may not have it in the next week due to maintenance and so on. So that type of data fluctuates a bit, but the essence of it you can get from the type of information that we source. Although there was no specific issue regarding Namakwa, I think Dr. Tau and Honorable Chair, it may be helpful for me to mention to Honorable Opperman that we have also been working in Namakwa to support the district to establish a fire department. I think on the 1st of July, we hosted a summit in Namakwa and Springbok with the Provincial Disaster Management Center, with a view to mobilize local private sector role players to support the institutionalization of a fire department in Namakwa. So that is something that we've been working on. Last year, sometime in October, Santam also procured equipment for Namakwa for about 250,000, which is placed in strategically in the district of Namakwa. Then the issue of the single emergency number, it's a critical issue. We have, for the last 2 years, been working with the Department, it was then at the time the Department of Telecommunication and Postal Services, which is now, I think, Department of Communication, Department of Health, SAPS, and Telcom, to institute a single emergency number. It will be a 112 number. We've made a lot of progress in that. We were supposed to have launched this process led by the Department of Health. The idea was that it should have been launched already, but launching was delayed. But testing of the system is currently underway. And how it will work is that we have provided to the Department of Communication all telephone numbers of all fire departments, so that if a person makes a call from California on a cell phone, the system will automatically pick up that this person is calling from Calpinia, and it will route the call back to the number of Calpinia which is on the system, so that it's much more seamless. Then you don't have a time, a wastage of time in terms of filtering and so on, where a call comes in and a person processes and so on. But that system will cover both EMS and fire in terms of creating this particular single emergency number. So that is work that is underway. It's led by the Department of Health and the Department of Communication. But from our side, we will make sure that fire issues are also addressed. And that way, we are able to also continue to have a situation where if a person knows, for example, the Mukhale City area, they have their own local emergency number. So that number will continue working. But if I'm traveling through Mukhale City or West Rand, and I see an emergency and I do not know the local number, I then call the 112, then the system will still route me back to Mukhale City in terms of the details that we would have loaded on the system. Then the issue of, I think this is the last issue, the issue of informal settlement fires. This is a concern, honorable members, that keeps us awake at night, because we see that there is an increase in the number of fires, especially those affecting children and older people. But our own observation of this is that, and our own narrative over the years has been that
fire departments can make the most impact through attempting to change behavior of people living in informal settlements, and doing that through education and awareness and advocacy. So we have encouraged many cities. The city of Johannesburg has quite a good program called Public Information, Education and Relations. The city of Ekurhuleni has something similar. And basically all the major cities, including smaller towns, also have an awareness element within their fire department so that they are able to raise awareness. But one of the issues that we have picked up over time is that there's also an element of negligence in some of these shack fires. I think the case of Alexander, the one that was in the news not long, it's a typical case where a person would leave children and go elsewhere, and then they lock them in. And when the fire occurs, it becomes difficult for them to escape. That's why we are now starting to partner with private sector to install smoke alarms, so that when the fire starts, the smoke alarms can go off and they raise awareness of the neighbors, so that they are able, the people are able to work together to fight those fires. But we also have, in some cases, which may not be common, but it does happen that there are cases of arson as well, where there will be domestic tensions and also that type of thing, where someone will then lock the shack on the outside and set it on fire. It does happen. It may not be as common, but we know that if you were to do a deep dive of the problem, you will pick up that some of those fires are exacerbated or are caused by such type of situations. What is also of concern, I think, which links to the work that has been done by our colleague in terms of IUDF, is the whole issue of the effect of informal urbanization on access to settlements for firefighting purposes. We also pick up that to be a problem. And what we are saying to fire departments, and we're propagating this also in our white paper, is that when a fire department buys equipment or fire truck, they should also ensure that they use a risk-based approach. So in other words, if you have got informal settlement, the type that is here in House Bay, for example, when you buy equipment, you should be able to buy vehicles or fire trucks that can access those places so that you are able to provide services. But the challenge in some cases is that once you access the place, you normally will struggle with accessing water from hydrants. Because we also now pick up that many places do not have hydrants or do not have functional hydrants. And that is also a concern that we are picking up, which also in some cases results in situations where firefighters are attacked. Because people will say, you are here, you fight fire for 5 minutes and you stop. Only to find that the 5 minutes is the amount of water you have. Then you need to sustain the operation using hydrants, which may not either be there or not function in some of the areas as well. So those are some of the issues that perhaps one can add to our response as a professor. Thank you, Honorable Member.